CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest, now on Spotify, so listen on Spotify. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, it's kind of funny because Days is the only soap still airing original episodes, which they certainly couldn't have known like 8 months ago when they were filming. But they have a lot of story going on and like a lot of cast changes happening. So we are going to see the return of Olivia Rose Keegan as Claire. Claire has been in the sanitarium for years, you may recall, ever since she tried to light her aunt slash bestie Sierra on fire. And we actually spoke to Olivia for an interview in the new issue. And she tells us that she was so excited to get the call to come back and, you know, like see what the show had planned for her character. And, you know, Olivia's got a lot going on these days. Days is not the only show that we're going to see her on. She also snagged a role in the second season of the Disney Plus series, High School Musical, the musical, the series. She's going to play a very determined girl named Lily. We'll see her real life singing skills come into play. And, you know, she says it's been like a really cool experience. But back at Days, through Claire, we're going to meet Gwen, a fellow patient at Bayview. And that's played by Young and Restless alum Emily O'Brien, who was Jana on the soap. And she will also turn out to be Jake's ex-girlfriend, who definitely spells trouble.
Well, I'm really pleased that Days is bringing Claire back. You know, I think we all felt at the time that she was written out that like Olivia had really hit her stride as Claire and was such a dynamic troublemaker on the campus. So I think it's going to be really fun to see whether that year in Bayview has changed her or not. And obviously, you know, it could be a nice complication for Ben and Sierra to have to deal with her presence again. Also in the new issue, we have an interview that I did with YNR superstar Eric Braeden, who plays Victor. Now, I've done a bunch of interviews with Eric over the past few years, both from the office and in his dressing room. But this was first because we were both in our homes. And I was totally like tickled to find out how he has been spending his forced hiatus from playing Victor, which includes not only watching vintage episodes of YNR, including Victor and Nikki's wedding. And we got his review of that 1984 classic episode. But I also found out that Victor Newman is a Seinfeld fan in real life. And we also talked about some more serious subjects like how he thinks production at YNR might change once it is allowed to resume in light of the coronavirus and under what circumstances he would be willing to return and so forth. He's a real like straight shooter. And I think it's a good read.
It's definitely a good read. I was so excited to get my hands on it. And I could bet it's the number one question, you know, on every soap fan's mind, which is when are the shows coming back? Now, Bold and Beautiful just sent a memo to its cast and crew indicating that they were working on a plan to return in June. I mean, it's a very fluid plan, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, this would need a lot of approvals, I imagine, from the governor of California, as well as the CBS studios in which the show films. Scott Clifton, who plays Liam, hosted a Twitter chat in which he said they're all itching to get back, but, you know, they want to be safe as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he points out that there's going to have to be like a lot of new protocol in place, you know, likely fewer people in scenes on set, less proximity between the actors and scenes. And, you know, there's certainly a lot to work out in a medium, you know, pretty much based in romance, which usually means, you know, kissing, lovemaking, and actually being close.
Right. Yeah. You know, obviously, like the health and safety of the cast and crew is going to be of paramount importance to everyone at all of the shows. But it does kind of like blow your mind to think about what it will require to get the shows back up and running. I mean, you can't social distance, like in a tiny control booth, you know what I mean? And can't do it in a makeup chair. But to your point, I think it's all but guaranteed that at least some of the new production practices will become obvious on screen. You know, I kind of wonder if there are planned stories being scrapped or at the very least reworked in light of all of this. Like when General Hospital left off, Ava was poised to have a big party at Windermere celebrating the unveiling of her portrait. And I kind of wonder if like a few of those invitations will get lost in the mail between now and whatever that episode gets shot.
I guess we shall see. You know, I do remember hearing something, you know, whether this is like true or not, but being able to film, but they can alter it to make it look like people are actually closer than they were when they filmed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are so many advanced techniques that they could possibly employ to create, I guess, whatever look they need to. But another question is, do they address the pandemic? You know, soaps, I feel, usually tend to stay out of any real life events occurring, you know, other than social issue storylines, of course. Mm-hmm. But there aren't really like specific ripped from the headline stories that are told using like real names or anything. I mean, I do remember Days honoring the victims of 9/11 during the annual Horton ornament hanging at Christmas. But other than that, I can't point to any like real life stuff we've seen.
Yeah, you know, I think especially because of the time lag, it would be really hard to like introduce the pandemic into the storylines that are already in progress. But at the same time, it's such a pervasive issue outside of the fictional worlds of TV that it might feel jarring not to have it mentioned. You know, I don't know. I suppose that's another we shall see moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, one person who has certainly kept things fun during this quarantine is our guest today, Steve Burton, who plays General Hospital's uber popular Jason Morgan, has just received a Daytime Emmy nomination for lead actor, but has managed to keep an amazing social media presence that we will certainly talk to him about. Well, hi, Steve.
What's going on?
Hello.
So happy you're joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, tell us how you have been doing these last few months.
Oh, man. You know, obviously it's strange times and it's been really weird. But I got to say, you know, these last couple months have been good for me personally. So, you know, there's not many times in my life where I've had to stay home this long. And I'm sure for a lot of people. You know, and Bradford and I have been so busy with doing stuff that it's really been a great break for us just to kind of think about, hey, what do we want to do? How do we want to, you know, expand our brand? What else can we do? And I just, you know, I had the mindset of however long this was going to last. I just wanted to learn a new skill, to just come out of this better, you know, and not waste this time, you know, spend time with my wife, my kids. You know, and just, I don't know, just keep creating content for people to have fun and laugh and smile, especially during these times. And, you know, we've been working hard at putting content out there and just kind of game planning for when the gate opens and we can run out and get back on the road and get back to work and try to figure out how to juggle all this stuff that we've been doing now and then going back to work. But it's been, you know, there's obviously, look, it's not a great time for a lot of people. And I've had a couple days, you know, in here that have been tough, you know, just you go through the emotional swing of why, you know, we're stuck at home. What's going on? Can we go back to work? You get angry. You hear it, you know, you can't get any correct information from anywhere. So it's just been this crazy, you know, I know it's a crazy roller coaster, but just trying to stay focused. I've been trying to keep a routine, really, you know, and that's really what gets me through the day. I get up and I get up and I prepare the day like I'm going to work. You know, I get up, spend a little time on some stuff in the morning, work out, you know, get ready for the day, shower, get dressed, just like a normal day. So, and then I have obviously stuff to do and the kids are home now because everybody's Zooming school now and that's almost over with. So, you know, it's been busy. It's really been busy. I haven't even gotten to watch any TV, man. This is ridiculous.
And you are not quarantining right.
Yeah.
I know. I haven't binged. We haven't binged anything. So I don't know. I still have a month or two left, I'm sure. So I'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, obviously, Steve, we both want to give you our warmest congratulations on your Emmy nomination.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what would mean more to you, winning this lead actor trophy that you're up for, or your 1999 Soap Opera Digest Award for Hottest Male Star?
Listen, that's so funny because when I won that, I was very sarcastic and I probably wasn't as grateful as I should have been back then. And I think Soap Opera Digest got mad at me for a little while.
Oh, really?
But that's, yeah.
We did?
I don't know. That was the rumor because I wasn't super grateful. Like, you know, I was kind of a smart ass and, you know, because I thanked hair and makeup for looking so good. But hey, you know, listen, I miss those awards. I miss, man, the Soap Digest Award, they did it right. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, man. That was like a huge production.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. But I'll take the Emmy. Thanks.
Okay. Well, all kidding aside, what does this nomination mean to you?
Oh, man. It's, you know, it never gets old. That's for sure. And especially in lead actor. It's always been this thing for me. Like, I know I'm a lead, but when it comes to material, I'm supporting almost. And what I mean is for people who are listening, you know, it's this fine line of, are you supporting? Are you lead? Because that's the thing I always get. Steve, you're a lead actor. You should be in lead. I said, yeah, but you know, there's a show that I might have two good scenes and then I'm popping my head out of a bush for four scenes. you're spying on somebody and I can't use that, right. You know, because when we started really submitting for the Emmys way back, you would have to pick a full show or two. Right. So, and we know, and you guys know that the guidelines have changed over the years and they keep changing. Now you can pick, you know, various scenes from various shows. So I don't know. I just, you know, put myself in lead. I'm like, I'll just do it. And I left it up to my producer, one of the producers at GH to kind of help me and make the final pick for me. Because I had shows where I might've had some good scenes in that one, but it wasn't a full show. And the only full show I had was with Laura Wright. After Sam, I think, was going to jail, and I went back to Sonny's house and talked to her and my BFF, Carly. And the scenes came out great. You know, she's a wonderful scene partner. She's amazing. And, you know, I don't know. I just left it up to them. I just try not to think about it a lot. I'm always last minute. They're like, Steve, we need your tape. We need your tape. If they call it a tape anymore. Steve, we need your reel. We need your reel. And I'm like, okay, then I got to go to Elizabeth Cordy, who knows the history of the show and knows your scenes. And then, you know, then it's a whole process that I really don't look forward to, quite honestly. But, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll start paying attention. The greatest thing I heard was A. Martinez. Jill Phelps told me this. A. Martinez, after, if he felt like he had good scenes that day or a good show, he would mark the show number down.
Oh.
Right. So then he didn't have to be doing everything that we're all doing, you know, going to search for the best show and, hey, what show number was that or what was that, you know, and taking everybody's time up trying to figure this thing out. But I don't know. A's pretty smart guy. So, you know, maybe I'll do that next year, but probably not. Thank you.
21 years later, you'll adopt the A. Martinez process.
Yeah, right.
Now, you've been doing a lot of filming for your new YouTube series with your partner in crime, Bradford Anderson,
yeah.
From your closet.
So yeah, given I'm in here now.
Well, given that the ceremony is virtual this year with all the nominees at home, will you be in your closet on Emmy night?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because, you know, we haven't gotten any guidelines or anything. I don't know what they're going to ask us to do. Are they going to say, hey, find a white wall and stand there, or be on the couch or be in the pool? I mean, what are you going to do? You know,
right.
You know, I told James Patrick Stewart, I think it would be so cool if he was just lounging in his pool, you know, on his iPad. How cool would that be? That would be amazing. And then you win. That's cool. But yeah, I got to figure it out. I mean, you know, those are all the topics. It's like, what are you going to wear? Do you dress up? You know, are you sitting on your own couch in a tux like an idiot? Or what are you, you know, I don't know what to do, you know? So I could always be in my closet in my black t-shirt like right. I am every day. So, there you go.
So, as we just mentioned, you've launched some new YouTube programming over the quarantine period. All right.
Yes.
So you've got More Awesome, which is a companion to your weekly podcast. That's awesome. Sure. With Stephen Bradford. You've got Seven Questions with Stephen Brad. And now you've got Bad Jokes. yes. where you and Bradford try to make each other break and laugh with the yes. bad jokes. So yes. what made you decide to dive in on YouTube, and how's it been going?
Well, it's been going amazing. So that's the one thing, you know, I love marketing. I'm fascinated with it. I love it. It's part of what we do, you know, for our brand. You got to, you know, you have to learn how to market yourself and market for yourself, as you guys know. So, you know, YouTube was something that I've never really looked into, and I had the time, and I told Bradford, I go, let's just try the show 7 questions with Steve and Brad and get some guests. Okay. Let's create some content. He's like, okay. So, and then I just started kind of diving into YouTube, spending probably 3 to 4 hours a day in the first month, just learning YouTube. You know, there's definitely a way to, optimize YouTube for sure. You know, I mean, it's the second biggest search engine on the internet besides Google. So, you have to, you know, the hashtags have to be right. Your end cards, your screen cards, there's so much that goes into building a successful YouTube channel, right? So I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. That's really was my job. I'm like, all right, this is the new skill that I'm going to learn 60 days out of the pandemic or 90 days out. I'm going to have a good idea of how to use YouTube. And that's what we did, you know, and we launched 7 questions, like you said, bad jokes. I said, hey, let's try this. And he's like, okay. And then we did phone a fan and more awesome. So we're just trying to get content out there for people to have fun and smile, especially during these times. Cause I know mm-hmm. a lot of people are having a really difficult time, you know, with anxiety and isolation and, you know, paying their bills. And so we're just trying to, you know, create content to kind of let people escape and laugh a little bit. So, but it's going, thank you for asking. It's been going really well. And, you know, we just got to figure out how to keep it up while we get back to work.
Right.
Well, so. I can say for anyone listening, I listen to bad jokes. I watch bad jokes. It's hilarious. So if you need a laugh, perfect thing. So.
Yeah. Thank you. Bad jokes is a lot of fun. You're just watching two dummies try not to laugh. That's it. That's all you're doing. So
that could have been a great title.
Yeah. Well, that's yeah. So we did a 7 questions with Maura West and Finola yesterday together. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. And I'm like, you didn't know this is 7 questions with two dummies because we just felt so dumb compared to them. So we were just like, I don't know, man. I think I've ruined my image doing this stuff. So anyway.
No, not at all. Okay, so let's take a bit of a deep dive into your career. You started out playing hunky young surfer Chris on the sitcom Out of This World.
Yes.
So what was the feeling for you of landing that job and like getting your first big break?
Yeah, it was, you know, my dad who's passed away, but he was kind of instrumental in my career. You know, he was the guy who just said, hey, why don't you try it? Let's take a commercial workshop, see how you like it. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll do it. I was in high school, you know, I was 16 years old. And I ended up getting an agent from a commercial workshop. And then I went on probably 50 plus commercial auditions, didn't get anything. Then I finally started getting some commercials. And then that agency had a theatrical division. And they said, hey, you want to go out on some stuff? I said, yeah, sure. So I started going out on some stuff and I really sucked. And and that's the feedback I kept getting. He's green. He's green. He's green. He's green. He's green. So I had to start taking some classes and try to work my way back into those casting directors and go, hey, I think I'm better. Can you audition me again? So one of those auditions was at the time it was at Universal Studios and it was Out of This World. You know, it was when the new prime time, there was a whole campaign for NBC. It was the new prime time at 7:30. They tried to switch prime time from 8 to 7:30. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday were all new shows that were leading into the primetime shows at 8. And we were one of those shows. And it didn't work. So then we went syndicated with like Charles in Charge and Jimmy Walker had a show called Busted Loose. And we had our show and there was a couple other shows. So, it was amazing. It was amazing to get. It was, we didn't do like really traditional full seasons. It was like, hey, you're going to do 7 episodes out of these 13. And the next year you'll do 10 episodes out of these 13. And it was a sitcom granted. And I didn't even know what I was doing. So, you know, you kind of learn on the job and you figure it out, you know? And I still kind of look back and go, oh gosh. But my hair was beautiful. That's all it meant.
I loved that show. You know, I loved it.
I mean, everybody loved that show. You know, they loved it. It was a great idea, you know, and Burt Reynolds was the dad, was the alien in the box, which I thought was so cool. And, you know, and then you had Donna Pascal and Doug McClure, Maureen, Christina Nigra, and Joe Alasky, who was a, he did voices for all the Warner Brothers. Like he took over for Mel Blanc, essentially. Joe Alasky did. Yeah. So that was cool. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We were on Universal in the beginning and it was so fun because you do it in front of the live audience and you felt like you're in this big studio. The Universal tram would come by, you know, and people would wave at you. And it was just a, you know, it was just a great time in my life. And then, and for the last 2 years, we moved to a kind of an independent studio where we were kind of off on our own, like we are at General Hospital right now. But it was fun, you know. It's all learning. And during that time is when I actually did my stint on Days of Our Lives. That was my introduction to daytime. We had a break from Out of This World, and I went over and was supposed to do, I think it was like 10 episodes of Days, and it turned into a lot more. And then I had to go back to Out of This World. So,
well, we're gonna ask, you know, a little more about Days, but before we move on from Out of This World, you know, I think it's fair to say that your career peaked when you got to work with the legendary Mr. T on an episode of Out of This World. What do you remember about that experience?
Well, he was, first of all, who doesn't know Mr. T? You know, if you're anywhere from the 80s and you don't know Mr. T, I don't know where you've been. But, you know, I mean, I love the A-Team. I loved Mr. T, obviously, from Rocky. And it was great because we got a lot of cool guest stars like that. But he was just a really cool guy, really nice guy. So it was just fun. It was fun to see all his gold chains.
Did he give you an I Pity the Fool? Did he do it for you?
Well, I can't remember. I'm sure he did on the show because, you know.
That was the tagline.
Yeah, totally.
That was it. I Pity the Fool. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, you did mention you're on Days as Harris Michaels, who was involved with Eve, who was played by Charlotte Ross.
Charlotte Ross, yeah, she was amazing, yeah.
So what stands out to you about your time on Days?
Again, just it was, you know, the process was different for me there. And, you know, the thing is, I was so young and naive, it was okay. You know, that was the thing is having my dad with me a lot of the times was I never really got down on myself too much because of the rejection. You know, but that being said, being on Days was just a new experience for me. It was really exciting. It was over at Sunset Gower, which I had auditioned there, you know, hundreds of times. And it was just, you know, that was a time when I don't want to say the heyday of soaps because the soaps have been cyclical in their popularity. Right. I mean, Luke and Laura. But I feel late 80s and early 90s to mid 90s was a good time for soap operas.
For sure.
And Days was, you know. I don't know. I'm sure Stephen was there. Yeah, Stephen was there. Stephen Nichols and Mary Beth and, you know, yes. Billy Warlock. And I mean, it was all those guys. So that's how I got my first really introduction to soap operas was Days of Our Lives. And it was cool. Everybody was nice. It was fun. And it wasn't easy. And I still couldn't act.
when you first auditioned for GH a few years later, like, was that just another audition for you? Or at that point in your life, were you hoping to like score a long-term job on daytime?
No, there was actually a stretch where I didn't really want to audition anymore for soap operas for some weird reason. You know, I was testing a lot for TV series, you know, auditioning for movies a lot. And soap operas were just really not on my radar at all. Mm-hmm. And, I got the audition for General Hospital first. It was for the character of AJ. Okay. So I went in, to read for AJ and I was 20 when I auditioned for AJ and I looked like I was 12 years old. So that didn't really work out, but Mark Teschner remembered me and saw something in me, thank God for Mark. I owe a ton to Mark Teschner. And he brought me back when they were casting Jason. And I went in, I auditioned multiple times. And I've told this story on stage a lot because it's a funny story. And I don't know if I've told you guys or not, but I can kind of just buzz through it. I'll give you the cliff notes. And it was a time, it was right toward the end of Gloria Monty's reign there at General Hospital. And, you know, you've heard stories about Gloria. She was the mad scientist, super talented, but sometimes they'd go to midnight, you know, sometimes she'd do scenes 50 times. And they brought, it was me and, man, I hate that I forget the third guy, but it was me and Eric Close, who you guys know, because he was on Santa Barbara for a while, and then he went off to do a bunch of primetime stuff. But it was me, Eric, and this other guy testing. We were supposed to test for Jason. And we'd already been in there multiple times, you know, in front of producers, the casting directors, the producers. We were supposed to test. And Mark's like, okay, your test date's this. Come on in and wait in the waiting room, and I'll get you when you guys test. So, of course, they get to the time, and Gloria's like, we can't do it today. We're too busy. Right. So Mark's like, guys, I'm sorry. Can you guys come back tomorrow? We're like, yeah, sure. We'll come back tomorrow. So we come back tomorrow. We're sitting in the waiting room, and we're just hanging out for hours in the waiting room. And he's like, oh, guys, I'm sorry. Gloria can't do it today. Can you guys come back tomorrow? I said, yeah, because I don't have a job. So I'll be happy to come back tomorrow. So this kind of went on literally for four or five times. And then finally, I don't know, somebody must have said something to Gloria like, hey, these guys have been here for a week. We need to test these guys. So then she goes, okay, so this is what the test is, right? They tell Mark. Mark comes in. He goes, okay, this is the test. You guys don't have to read anymore. You've read enough. Now, all we're doing is during the next five, you're all going to go on stage. You're going to stand next to Gerald Hopkins. You're going to face him. You're going to go back to back. You're going to turn back to the camera, and you're going to smile. I said, okay. So right before we go down, Mark Teschner goes, Steve, come here. I said, what's up, Mark? And this is right, but you guys have been to the show. Mara, we've done stuff right in that waiting room. You know, where we do the Facebook Lives. That's where, that's the original waiting room. So the bathroom is literally, you know, what, 40 feet down the hall. Right. And Mark was like, come over here. I go, what's wrong? He goes, come in the bathroom. I go, hold on, buddy. Just wait a second. Okay. He goes, no, come in. He goes, how tall are you? I go, 5'10". He goes, okay. Well, Gloria wants somebody who's eye to eye with Gerald. I go, well, how tall is Gerald? He goes, about 6'5", 6'1". I go, how am I going to grow in three minutes, you know? And he's like, get in the bathroom now. So I go in the bathroom. I had Doc Martens on, and we started stuffing my boots with paper towels. And we stuffed my boots with paper towels until I was 6 foot tall. And I go, are you sure this is going to work? He's like, dude, you got to try it. I go, okay. So I'm walking funny now, because it's like I'm in high heels, you know? And I said, okay, I got to try to pull this off. And we go down there, and sure enough, I'm eye to eye with Gerald Hopkins. And, you know, they had a bunch of people in the booth. Lisa Snedeker Booth actually was in the booth, and I had known her, and she was like, yeah, I think you should pick that guy. So I guess it was a group decision, and they ended up choosing me. And we went back upstairs, and Mark said, hey, stay, you got it. I'm like, wow, amazing. Wow. So, and it wasn't even for contract role. It was for recurring at the time.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was amazing. And then my first day, I walk in, and you know, you guys have been there. So you have the security guard, and then you make a left and you go down the hallway where all the dressing rooms are. But that door was shut. There's a door there, and that door was shut. So I'm at the security guard, which is, you know, 7 feet away, and I'm around in the corner, and the door kicks open, and it's Tony Geary pissed off.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, okay, welcome to General Hospital. And I go, I'm not going to say a word. That was my motive for like the first 4 years. It's like, don't make eye contact with producers, Gloria Monty, and just go to your room and do your job and shut up. And that's what I did. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was
amazing. It's really amazing.
It's so fun.
Well, speaking of your first few years, I mean, you pretty much played a different character altogether, you know, Jason Quartermain. When you think about that and like the early era where you worked a lot with the Quartermain family and then, of course, got involved in the Karen Jagger story and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, how would you categorize those years?
Oh man, it was great. It was the best. I mean, coming on as a Quartermain was the greatest thing for me ever. You know, that whole Quartermain family was so fun. I can't tell you how much fun that we all had together. I mean, I love every one of them. I mean, David Lewis first, and then John Engel, and Anna Lee, and Stewart, of course, and Leslie Still to this day. And, you know, Gerald was AJ for a while, and then we had a few recasts in there with Billy and Sean. Jane Elliott, Wally Kurth. I mean, it was so fun. It was a family. I mean, we were the big dysfunctional family on camera and off. So, you know, but we had so much fun. What sticks out in my mind is all the holiday stuff was the best, right? Wow. You know, because, you know, I didn't grow up with a big family in real life. And it was always cool when the sets would turn. You're like, oh, it's fall now. Fall's coming. And the sets would look like fall, you know, and then they would look like Christmas. And then you'd have the family, you'd do the big family shows and stuff. So it really meant a lot to me. And, you know, obviously I'm close with everybody, but, you know, Stuart Damon was a huge proponent in me working more. You know, he would always go up and go, hey, you got to give this guy a shot. Give this guy a shot. He's good. Give this guy a shot. You know? Aww. So I love Stuart, and, you know, he was always a big fan of mine, and I love the guy so much, but it was just really a lot of fun. And then you had the teen story too, right? So that was right around the time where, you know, it was Karen, like you said, Karen and Jagger and Brenda and Sean. It was Sean at the time who was playing AJ. So we were like the young, you know, I don't want to say 90210, but that's kind of what they were going for, because that's right. What was popular at the time. So Wendy Rich even tried it, and I love Wendy. And she even tried to, she was like, Steve, you got to grow some sideburns. I go, what do you mean? She goes, look at 90210, look at Luke Perry and his sideburns. And I go, I can't even grow hair on my face. I mean, it's going to look so bad, you know? So, but Sean could do it, and he did it, and I couldn't do it. So, but it was a lot of fun, because we did locations and just, you know, and that obviously busted Antonio Sabato to the stratosphere there. He was the man. And it was just, man, I have such great, such great memories of that show, and what a way to start a career there. So it was fantastic. And then toward the end, and I know I'm talking a lot, and then toward the end, that's when Maurice came, toward the end of my first 4 years. And then that's really what changed my life and my acting career was him, mm-hmm. You know? So, and then I changed into Jason Morgan. And that was it.
So when that change happened, the huge change in direction for your storyline, the car accident, mm-hmm. the brain damage, the name change, you know, had you been itching to kind of shake things up and take on a new challenge, or did that all just kind of come as a surprise to you?
Well, as you guys know, and probably a lot of the viewers, because they've been watching for a long time, there's not many, on many shows, there's not a lot of people. There's probably a handful that work 3 or 4 days a week. Right. Usually it's your stories are cyclical in the sense is like, hey, you got a big run and then you're going to be on the B, or you're going to be on the back burner for a while. Right. So we had our, you know, I was involved in the family stuff, which was great. And then we had the teen story during the summer, which was fine. But 4 years in, I don't know if I was getting bored because I wasn't working a ton. And, you know, I see everybody else getting jobs out there and working out there. I'm like, oh, I don't know, man. And there was one day when we had craft service. Back then it was on the stage. And when Maurice first came to the show, he went through a lot of things, you know, with a breakdown and all these things. So he and I didn't really talk for the first 6 months he was there. Really? Because we weren't working together. Yeah. We weren't working together. And so you kind of, you know, there's times where I don't even see people for 3 months that are on the show with me, you know, now, you know, if we're not working together, you don't see them. So when he first got there, he was working a lot and I wasn't. And for 6 months or whatever, I didn't really talk to him. And you know, I thought, I'm like, oh, who's this guy coming in here thinking he's freaking Al Pacino, you know? and little did I know, the poor guy was having a nervous breakdown, you know? So, so he took a little bit of a break, but anyway, I was at the craft service table on stage with him, and he goes, and we didn't really talk before this. He was like, hey man, I just want to say, I saw some scenes with you and you're really good. You're very believable. I go, oh, well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I think it was with Monica's breast cancer story. I had some mm-hmm. scenes with Leslie. And he goes, you're very believable. And he goes, what are you going to do? I go, I'm thinking of leaving. He's like, oh, really? He goes, well, what's your technique? I go, what do you mean? He's like, acting-wise, is there a technique you use? I go, no, I have no idea technique. You know, I'm just doing what I'm feeling. You know what I mean? So he's like, well, let me work with you. I go, really? He goes, yeah, I'd love to work with you. You know, and And that moment was really where the change happened. You know, as Jason Quartermain, he started working with me, helping me break down my scenes, you know, just coaching me. I spent so much time with him, you know, after work, and him and Paul and his family, that I was literally like, I don't want to say living with them, but I was with Maurice so much that he was every day we'd go over my stuff. He'd have all his stuff, and then we'd break down all my scenes and go, okay, let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Do it again. Now let's go for a walk and do it. Now I'm going to throw this tennis ball at you and do it. Now we're going to do this and do it. Just keep going, you know? And I go, okay. He goes, deeper, go deeper. That was his thing all the time, because he's method, right? So he's like, go deeper, go deeper, go deeper all the time. So funny stories, Francesca James, who you guys know, she's a producer. She's been around for a long time. She was an angel producer. And it's when you had time to, you know, it was the early 90s. So you had time to do scenes 4 or 5 times. The producer would come out and say, hey, try this, try this, try this. Let's do it again. Okay, great. Moving on. Right. So it was with Sanait Ashanafi, who played Keisha, my girlfriend at the time on the show. And we had a scene where I was supposed to be taking her out to dinner. And I'm in the scene, and we do the scene, and Francesca comes out. She goes, what the F is wrong with you? I go, what do you mean? She goes, what are you doing? I go, well, I'm working with Maurice, and he tells me to go deep. You know, she goes, you're acting like you're dying, and you're in a scene with your girlfriend at dinner. She goes, get rid of that crap. I go, oh, okay. So, so that was funny. And then, you know, ended up my character. Once they changed my character, then it was, you know, then Maurice and I just worked together constantly. It was just, I don't know if he's ever worked with somebody so much. Like, we would just be together all the time. And what was so great about it was, we've kind of talked about this stuff on our podcast a little bit, is, you know, you guys know, you've been around the game for a long time. You know how fast we'd shoot things now. You know, we don't get a lot of rehearsal. And back then, it was so magical with Maurice and I. One of the things is, obviously, I love the guy and we have a great friendship that I think transfers to camera. But when we would shoot a scene, we had already rehearsed that scene 40 times. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like doing a play every day. Like at night, we would rehearse. I would go to his house and we would run the scenes and work the beats and moments and all that stuff. And by the time we got to stage, we were on take 40, right. which was so amazing. That's why those things happen, you know, because we're like, holy crap. And I get goosebumps even like right now thinking about it, because of all the work you do. And then you can just be so free on stage and go, wow, this is like, it's, you know, magic is happening in some of these scenes that we didn't plan on, because we've done it so many times and we're so free. You just throw it away and you do it, and it turns out awesome. So it was a big, you know, it was a big deal coming on as a Quartermain, and then making that change, and Maurice being there for me and teaching me how to act, essentially.
Pretty incredible.
Kind of hone my skills and my technique. You know, then he gets upset when I became better than him. If I win this Emmy, it's really great, because then I have one more than him. So thank you very much.
move.
Yeah. So it's been a great ride. I can't tell you.
Well, you could definitely argue that Jason and Sonny are one of daytime's longest running bromances.
I think so.
So why do you think this pairing has struck such a chord with the audience?
I think it's because of the friendship that we have. I mean, I love the guy like a brother, you know, I truly do. He's one of those people that you don't talk to for a year and it comes right back. And there's no time missed, no time passed. And he's such a caring, giving guy. And our friendship, I feel, you know, transferred to on screen, you know, and all the hard work that we did together, it showed on camera, you know, and we were just able to take our relationship to a whole different level with the depth of our relationship than the average friends on a soap opera. That's what I feel, you know, and that's what I think came off, you know. You're almost like, do these guys want to get together, or what's going on here? No. So But, you know, because there's always those jokes, but it's like, you know, I love the guy. So my, I love the guy like a brother, and he loves me, you know, and we're just really great friends off camera, you know, and on camera, I think it showed. And there's a trust and a vulnerability there when you have that relationship off camera that does transfer to camera, you know, you're able to be vulnerable and be there for your scene partner in the scene because you have this deep relationship. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool. It's really amazing that either of these guys had the emotional energy to be in these really big romances with women, given their affection for each other. But you have had, you know, a bunch of really popular pairings on GH. And I want to hear your take on some of your leading ladies. Jason and Robin was a really big pairing in its day. Tell us about working with Kimberly McCullough.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was for me, because of coming on the show, that, you know, those years right when I was making the transition to probably a couple years after that were kind of golden years for me on General Hospital. In the sense that, I mean, you can't ever argue with the Robin Stone AIDS storyline. I mean, it was one of the best storylines I felt that was told on General Hospital. And Kimberly's obviously was there from a young girl and became just a fantastic actress. And I always give her credit to my first Emmy. That was my first Emmy, was because I was working, obviously, for all the stuff Maurice did for me, which transferred then. For me, working with somebody like Kimberly, who's been there, you know, we worked hard, you know, and that's what I try to carry with me with every pairing, that, you know, that work ethic, which I had, which I didn't really know how to use until Maurice kind of showed me the framework of it. And with Kimberly, I mean, we worked hard and we had a lot of emotional stories and emotional stuff. And it was because of, you know, that pairing and her that I won, that I was fortunate enough to win my first Emmy. So we'll always be friends. She's awesome. I'm so happy for her in her new career directing. But we had a great run together.
For sure.
Well, I can remember very vividly how passionate the Liaison fans were.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of letters and like paraphernalia
Andy.
From them. Yeah, Andy for sure.
Yeah.
But that relationship was, you know, very important to the fans. So tell us about working with Rebecca Herbst.
Well, with Becky, I mean, you know, Becky and I became, me, Michael, Becky, and my wife became pretty good friends off camera too. So again, we had a situation where, obviously Becky's a great actress and her work ethic is fantastic. And when we started working together, we're just like, look, let's just figure this out and work, you know, and, something happened and we had great chemistry and it worked. We had great storylines and she was great to work with, man. We had a great run also. And you know, we, since our friendship off camera, again, I think it transcends to camera, and we had a lot of fun, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was good. It was good. But you're right. The Liaison fans always would send me cookies to fatten me up. Whatever.
I think
they were a very passionate fan base and they were awesome. I mean, they supported us. So, you know,
I think they took out an ad in the magazine, if I recall.
They may have.
Yeah. I remember dealing with that at some point because they were really like, they wanted to make their feelings known.
Yes.
Yeah. And
yes.
They did. And then of course, really in earnest in like 2004, the Jason and Sam romance that continues to this day began.
Yeah.
Tell us about working with Kelly Monaco.
Yeah. So what's cool and interesting about this relationship is that I'm not sure the writers knew at the time. First of all, I wasn't in a relationship on the show. And that's technically where our penthouses were across from each other, me and Sonny's penthouse. And I don't think they knew what to do with Sam at that time. Right. So she was pregnant, got pregnant by Sonny. And I don't know if Sonny didn't, you know, want to, you know, have Sam around or whatever, but he's like, here, Jason, watch, right. take care of Sam. I'm like, okay.
Sure,
so
boss.
Exactly. And what I think why there was a success in this relationship was that it was never meant to be a relationship. And that's what was cool about it. It was almost like bodyguard, right? It was like, I was here to protect this girl and make sure everything was okay and that she stayed healthy and she stayed safe. And then we became friends, and then it went into a romance. So that was kind of the first time I think I've ever done had a relationship on the show where we were just kind of friends, and there was no motive of us even being together until they saw us starting work together. Like, wait a minute, there's something here. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go this way. And that's what we did, you know, and Kelly, you know, we worked, even when we were just working as friends on the show, we ran our stuff. I kind of took, you know, what Maurice said, and I'm like, look, let's just work the crap out of these scenes every single day. And that's what we ended up doing for like 8 years every day. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the character, the couple became so popular, is because of the work that we put in. And, you know, she's not afraid to work. I wasn't afraid to work. And we ran stuff 10, 15 times before we even got on stage, you know? So, and we had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful trust and working relationship that made it really easy for us to do stuff. So, you know, it was great. It's great. Oh, I said it was great, because obviously we're not, you know, this parole officer's killing us right now. So, right. Yeah, man, it was fun. We had a great run in the, you know, the first, before I left the show, we had a wonderful, wonderful run. So mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Well, I think it's fair to say that JSAM fans have really been clamoring for the two of them
to
be a little happy for a while. Would you welcome that? Or do you feel like the drama lies in keeping them apart?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's always the problem with soap operas. It's like, I mean, can't we just be happy for just a little while? I mean, come on. I was in Russia for 5 years. Can I have some happiness somewhere? But yeah, it'd be nice to be happy and have a bit of I don't want to say normal life, because you can't really have a normal life with what Jason does, but you know, just our life, you know, let's just get our life back. And then we can deal with Cyrus and all this other stuff that's going on with the show. But yeah, it'd be nice.
Now, you mentioned, of course, you did take your leave from GH for a little bit, and you mm-hmm. ended up going over to YNR to play Dylan McAvoy, and you picked up a second Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in the process.
Yes.
How would you describe that experience that you had on YNR?
You know, I know a lot of people didn't like it, and I was threatened multiple times on Twitter, for going over there, for leaving GH. But, you know, going over there, I was at a time in my life where, changes were happening, you know, and I needed a break, quite honestly. And having that break and then being able to go to another show with a whole new character, you know, a whole new perspective, like, hey, I'm the new kid here. I got to prove myself. You know, I have to work harder than I worked at General Hospital, because, yeah, they may have heard of me, the actors, but, you know, I'm over here now and I got to do something. So that was, you know, it was really refreshing for me to go play a new character. And they had written the character, and it was great. And I had so much fun there, quite honestly. It was, the actors were great. The actresses were great. The crew, everybody was very welcoming. And, you know, I just wanted to work, and I wanted to do something different. And that's where I think people don't really, you know, or they may forget, like, actors were born to do different things. You know, we want to try different roles. We want to try to expand and do something different. And playing the same role for a long time is great, because, you know, you get to go through crazy stories and do some cool stuff and be tested as an actor, but to play a different character is nice too. And that's what it gave me the, you know, just the opportunity to go play a different character and play with different people and just be on a different show. And it was fantastic. It was awesome. I made some great friends over there, lifelong friends, you know, people I still talk to today, like Peter Bergman and Doug Davidson. And it was just really great for me. So mm-hmm. It was a great 4 years. I mean, to win an Emmy 20 years apart, I still go, how does that even possible? You know,
cool.
to be doing That's that amazing. For so long and go, or what, 18 years apart or whatever it was, be like, wow, you did. I mean, it was so crazy, you know, but it gave me, it reignited a passion for acting for me. And that's what was important, you know?
Right.
And, you know, and they gave me great story while I was there, and it really paid off and it worked out. And most importantly, what it did was, it gave me a new perspective coming back to General Hospital. So mm-hmm. I was able to kind of, you know, I don't want to say you, as an actor, some, you know, a lot of stories that we did were pretty deep and, we were, Maurice made me method. So, you carry that stuff with you a lot, you know, and when you're doing it all the time, every day working, you know, I was fortunate enough to work 4 or 5 days a week for eight to 10 years, you know, you're doing 30, 40 pages a day and there's a burnout there. And then you just don't feel like yourself, you know, and you're home with your kids and you're not really there. And it's just all these things kind of play into it. And then having the break refreshed me. And, and I was able to work on myself personally too, just because I had time off and I wasn't working a lot of days at YNR and I was traveling a lot. So I had a lot of time to listen to books on the plane and just work on my, you know, my mental game. And just, you know, when the time came to come back to GH, I'm just, you know, I just had a whole new perspective on going back home. And that's what it felt like, you know, just going back home, seeing everybody with a whole new perspective of, man, I'm getting a second chance to come home. That's really what it was for me. And I try to remember that every day. It's like, hey, you got a second chance to come home. You're home. Do your job, you know, and be grateful. And that's really what it is. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've been back on GH for almost 3 years, which is amazing. I can't believe that time. It just feels like it's flown. But you and I have talked before about how this sort of current post-Patient Six iteration of Jason Morgan feels maybe a little bit more free with his emotions. You know, how much do you think that comes from the writing? You know, we have talked about him being a little more easy to cry. But how much of that comes from the writing and how much do you think that comes from, you know, your own evolution as an actor and a person and how that applies to the character?
Yeah, I mean, I think the writing's always there, but I think it was more probably the evolution of me as a human being, you know, just being more grateful, responsive, vulnerable, appreciative. Those things really help you open up as an actor. And you know, sometimes it's like, because I joke about it too, you know, I'm like, what the hell happened to me in Russia? Because it's like, I come back and all of a sudden, you know, I have menopause and it's just like, it's like, I mean, you know, this guy starts crying at anything. What is wrong with you? You know? You know, it's great. The fans, you know, I joke about it, but, the fans respond to it and they've been, you know, they kind of joke with me, but it's probably been more me, I hope, evolving as a person, and just being able to be more vulnerable just in general, in real life and on camera. So,
mm-hmm. Well, that kind of brings us to the end here. It's like when you think about the Steve Burton that first walked into that GH studio in 1991, could you ever have imagined becoming such an important part of the show, an Emmy winner, potentially a lead actor Emmy winner as you are today?
No, I don't even think it was on my radar then. You know, it's crazy. I don't know. I feel so grateful and it's such a blessing to be able to look back and go, holy cow, man, from 1991 till now, look at your journey, you know, and obviously there's ups and downs and personal lives and all these things, but to have that kind of be the stability, which usually it isn't for actors, right? That the job isn't the stability for actors. It's usually their family life, hopefully, that gives them that stability. But I kind of had both. You know, I had a great family at home and then I have this great family at work. And it was just, you know, what a blessing that is. And to look back, it's still kind of mind boggling. Like, you know, I was in the car the other day and Cherie, my wife's dad, Cherie's dad, Roy was like, Cherie said, hey, do you know Steve got nominated for lead actor? And he's like, no, I didn't know. That's awesome. And I go, yeah, it's cool. And I'm thinking, I'm like, lead actor, that's crazy. It's like, it's so cool to be, you know, in lead actor. Supporting actor is great, obviously, but you know, we joke now, supporting actor was great because it was over fast. because you didn't wait too long, you know, you're like, and the winner is or isn't, and you're like, done, the pressure's off, you're like, okay, now I can like get a beer and be cool, you know. But now it's lead actor and you got to wait till the end, and it's a big, you know, it's a big deal. It's always, you know, lead actor in the Oscars, lead actress, those are the big category. So it's been an incredible journey, and I'm coming up on my 50th birthday, which is even crazier to even say. And I say,
I know, it's two days after the Emmys, right?
Yeah, it's 2 days after the Emmys. It's like, but I feel so great. I feel so, you know, energized in life and just like, you know, ready for the next chapter of whatever's coming, you know, because my life's half over. And Bradford likes to joke. He goes, no, it's more like 2/3 over. And and I go, thanks, buddy. So, but I feel so good. And it's like, you know, it's incredible to even have this uplifting kind of news for not just us, but the fans too, with the Emmys and then being on primetime. I think that's so cool, you know, mm-hmm. And people are focused. I don't know if it's just me, but people are like, you know, soaps have been getting a lot of, you know, kind of a lot of, or have been highlighted lately a lot during this pandemic more than normal, you know, which I think is great. And then we're going to be on primetime. The Emmys are, and I think that's cool. And it's just, you know, it's just a fun time. It's just a fun time. I mean, besides the stupid COVID, it's a fun time.
Right. Outside of the pandemic, it's a fun time.
Yeah, outside the pandemic, and I don't want to obviously downplay that because that's nothing to downplay, but having soaps kind of be highlighted during this time, I thought is cool, you know? Like, you guys are doing stuff, everybody's doing content, you got all these reunion shows, which I think is awesome. None of this stuff, me doing YouTube, the reunion shows, all this great content out there for the fans. None of it would have happened ever if we weren't going through this time.
No, it is. It's been fun for us to watch the reunion shows. Absolutely. You know,
yeah, it's been great. And look, we would not be on primetime Emmys if it wasn't for this pandemic.
That is true. We're back on broadcast, frankly, or network television.
Yeah, yeah, of course, on TV at all. Right. So, right. So it's, you know, obviously it's, you know, it's, there's a double-edged sword here, but it's great to see soaps kind of appreciated and highlighted. And really, it comes down to the fans always, right? I mean, without them, we wouldn't be doing what we do. You guys wouldn't be doing what you do. And they're the greatest fans in the world.
100%.
Agreed.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to seeing what you're wearing on Emmy night, where you'll be Emmy night.
Yeah.
And best of luck and congratulations. And thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. Thank you.
And keep the bad jokes coming.
We got them coming. We got more.
Okay.
We got more.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Steve Burton for being our guest. If you like this podcast, we're on Spotify, so listen on Spotify. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
Calling all coffee drinkers. If you've been trying to enhance your daily coffee routine, then Quest has got your back with their brand new iced coffees. Now available in 2 delightfully delicious flavors that'll be sure to add an extra pep in your step. Vanilla latte and mocha latte. Quest has been on a mission to help fuel you with protein-forward foods you'll love. Each bottle of Quest iced coffee is packed with 200 milligrams of caffeine, the same amount as 2 cups of regular coffee, plus 10 grams of protein per serving to help you supercharge your day. And did I mention that they only contain 1 gram of sugar? It might just be time to cheat on your iced coffee with iced coffee. Find Quest iced coffees on Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition. That's Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition.